Hey, friends. Welcome back to Ask Robin Black. Very odd. We started doing this on Sundays. 2 days later, it is quiet in the studio. Ramdeen is not here. Pollock is not here. And we're like, what are we going to do? And they came up with, why don't we do 30 minutes more of Ask Robin Black, something I can kind of do. Also, reps. I can immediately, within 2 days, come back to this idea of trying to have an open-ended conversation with you guys about questions you ask that I try my best to answer honestly. And I got lots of feedback, and thank you so much. Because the idea here, really, as odd as it is that it's already Tuesday and we've broken the script, is to get together on Sundays after or whatever day is after a fight, take questions and debate and discuss. We're going to try to do it live at some point. I think today, 30 minutes is all we're going to get. But I think the idea, especially when it's live and we can interact and chat and I can have Chase pull up questions and we can take follow-ups and stuff, I think we'll do an hour and way more maybe some days. But today, let's just kind of, you know, share, take some questions and try to give you some answers and open up some lines of thought and see where we can go. You know, it was really fun. I think I opened the first one saying part of the reason I wanted to do this was because it was scary to be on my own. So let's maybe stick with that and find something that I'm scared of here. I think I'm scared that it won't be as good as last time. Even though when you think about that, there's no reason that shouldn't be so. In fact, we should be able to get better. You know, more comfortable the next time, able to push further the next time, explore deeper ideas and build on the idea that whatever it is you did one time, you did it. You know how to do it kind of now. And so it is maybe. I think I've already worked that out. I don't think I'm scared now. So that's good. Again, I don't know exactly where we're going. I'm hoping this show and your feedback and interacting with you guys, fellow fight obsessives and people looking for philosophical connections to fighting, will help me work it out. But for today, let's do some questions. Okay. Chase, how we doing? Thumbs up. Chase just gives me a thumbs up every time. I don't know how valuable that is. Although, what should he do? Like, oh, man, this is not good. So thanks, Chase. Okay, first off, Sonoff Connolly. What do you think about a Teddy Atlas-type motivational speaker in the corner instead of a technical advisor like Greg? He means Greg Jackson. Technical advisor in your corner like Greg Jackson. We've all seen Greg Jackson before. I give you one or two specific things that you can deal with to help improve your situation in real time in a fight. In Toronto at UFC 206, Greg Jackson was in Cub Swanson's corner. I think Chase might be able to put in right here a little excerpt from that we can listen to and then respond to. Go ahead, Chase. Okay. So that was Greg Jackson, technical advisor, right there in action. This arm fucking fight. I did talk to Greg after, and he said rarely he's like that, but on this night he was. Why do I bring that up? Greg is one of the great corner men ever in fighting, considered by many to be the best. Okay, let's just stick with that thought. What's the most important thing? What's a better approach? What's the best approach? Okay, so we're going to go to the second question. We'll try to tie these in. Misuits says, ask Robin Black, what contributes most to dominant performances? Preparation, ability to stay relaxed mentally, physically, etc. Okay, so let's try to take this question and connect it. First, explore this one and then connect it to Teddy Atlas or Greg Jackson or anybody in the corner. Okay, when I think about what's the most important thing, the answer is it's all important and we don't yet really know. And that's what we're doing here. That's what this path of exploring what is happening in a fight is really all about. Now, there's a lot of reasons we're exploring this because we love fighting and we love the beauty of fighting. And it's so mystical at some times and simple at others and big at times and small at times. And if you're deeply curious and if you see deeper meaning in combat, we want to know these answers. And that is why I started this path that I'm on of exploring and studying. And as I get new answers, find the new questions and go further and further and further and further. And I guess that takes me sort of to making breakdowns. That's my way of finding some questions and doing my best to answer them. And I guess that's what we're trying to do here too. And so the process of starting that path of exploring what's what and what's most important and how it works takes you down a number of different stops. And if you stop at any of them, and I think this is was a theme of what we talked about last time, and it's something I think we're going to talk about more, is if you stop at any point on the path, you've stopped. Okay, that's great. You can put up a little building there. You can build a life at that stop on the path. But then you stop finding answers because you stop asking questions. So you look along as you're studying it. You're like, well, how does jiu-jitsu work? Oh, that's a kimura. How does it work? What is this technique? What techniques are there? So you really start with a lot of studying of technical analysis. That's a very early thing in your journey of trying to understand fighting. What do fighters do? And what do their coaches do to help them learn to do that? And so as I started exploring, so whatever, 4 years ago, I really wanted to look at that stuff. And there was, they didn't even call them breakdowns at that time. If they did, I'd never seen any. There was Jack Slack, who is this brilliant writer. He's a brilliant technical analyst, and even more so, he's a brilliant writer. There's something in his writing that moves you, and I really enjoy his work. There was BJJ Scout, who made videos. Nobody knows who he or she is, I don't think, and they made videos looking at different things that happened. I remember that one of the ones I had seen before I ever did breakdowns was something about judo, and I remember thinking that was really cool. And then Lawrence Kenshin, who became a very good friend and I respect deeply, he was taking video of Muay Thai and analyzing what was happening. And he was a really analytical mind. And I had started looking at this. There was something in the air. And I started making a little bit of breakdown. And I'd never seen anyone stand at a TV. If anyone's done it before 2014 or 2013, whenever I did it, I'd never seen it. And going out and presenting it there. So it became this fun thing to do. And I did that because Glenn McDonald, our senior producer, said, you should get out from behind the desk. We used to stand at a desk at that time. And I went out and I started doing it. It was really fun and I could point to it. And in that time, one of the first things you look at is technical analysis. So what happens when this happens and what happens? So that becomes the most important thing. Oh, where do you move your head? Where do you move your feet? How do you time a punch? What's timing? What's rhythm? What's distance? You know, how do people interact? How do they blend between striking and wrestling and jiu-jitsu? And what happens on the fence? And all of these hyper-technical things of this thing moves there and it means this and that happens. And so you start exploring that. And some people have now specialized in that. But that is never what I thought was the journey. That's one little segment, one little sliver, because as soon as you start to look at that, you can either go way deeper into that. And we have lots of people doing that. Dan Hardy and John Gooden do that extraordinarily well. But to me, there are little thin slices and layers of all of these things that matter in a fight and in anything you do in life, in any kind of performance in particular. And most of everything all of us do is some type of performance, a job performance or whatever. So the technical was layer one. And so that is what's the most important. Well, when you're young and you're starting, it's the technical. Then you realize as you get in there and guys are able to technically express all kinds of things in the gym. And if you've never fought, you don't or pushed it to been really under the duress and the emotion, you look at that and go, okay, that's that. This is X's and O's and arrows and whatever. But then you go, whether you fight or you are close to people who fight or you deeply study the performance, you're like, why can this guy not do this? Oh, the pressure and the stress and the psychological. That's big. So now that's the most important thing. And then when I break stuff down, now I realize, okay, there isn't technical. That is a stop on the journey. Let's do some of that, and let's add the psychological. So now you start to look at the psychological. Well, the psychological allows this, and you discourage somebody by touching them up, so they hesitate, and then if they hesitate, your confidence grows. And there is, and these are quantifiable, researchable, studyable things. And so I got really obsessed with that stuff. I started doing a podcast with David Mullins, who's a sports psychology consultant who's growing, constantly growing, far ahead of the game. And I befriended Tracy Trudeau, a psychology professor in Edmonton, or a PhD psychology, and my friend Dr. David Klonsky, who's a professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia. And these people and myself, with them, under their tutelage, we started to really obsessively study that. Now that's the most important thing. Because if you know all the technical and you can't do it, the technical is important until you've got at a certain level. And then when you can't do it because the psychology won't allow you, and this is true in all our lives, whatever we do, you know how to do something very well, but in the moment, sometimes now that's the most important thing. And then now we're doing that, and we've got a fighter that is moving to that level. We're starting to understand it. We're observing it. We're like, you know, even more deeply impassioned now with what we see because we understand it deeper. That's what I start to break down, and others, and other people, and that's where some of the knowledge expands. And then people go into, optimization, human optimization. Well, we have these skills, and we have this psychology. How do we learn faster? How do we absorb ideas? How do we learn better? How do we get more hours out of our training? How do we get more focused training? That's an extension of the psychological. That suddenly becomes the most important thing because everybody's here. Unless we can multiply our ability to go further, somebody else will, and that's what a McGregor is doing. That's what Holloway's doing, too. These people are starting to find ways to do more in the time, and this is happening in all walks of life. So that then happens. And then you look, and that's going on, but all of a sudden, Stipe Miocic, who is doing many or all of these things, suddenly can do things physiologically that others can't. He can change direction rapidly, which brings you over to Dominic Cruz, and you look at it and you go, well, why can Dominic do that? Oh, well, he's just got these skills. Dominic doesn't just have these skills. Dominic built those skills. He built them from zero. He made his body capable, his mind capable. So suddenly becomes physiological. What happens when a person changes direction? Just saying this guy did footwork A, B, and C is not telling the story. How did he learn it? How did he focus on it? What is it physically? Why can I not do it and he can? All of it. Now that layer gets added. So now you can be a specialist in any of these areas, or just like wrestling, boxing, jiu-jitsu, whatever, or you can study them all. You need to study them all. Your coach needs to study them all. Your consultant or psychologist, and they need to study them all, and I need to study them all, and you need to study them all, because this is what we're learning about. And then that happens, and on and on and on. Now we see, okay, that is all taking place, but wait, why does this guy fatigue? And I was talking about limiting words before. Wow, he's gassed out. Well, what does that really mean? There are three energy systems of the ATP-CP system, which lets you accelerate fast but burns fast and is gone quickly. There's the anaerobic system, and there's the aerobic system. How do they work within? Now you have to understand energy systems and make all of those pieces fit together. And now my thought of a breakdown is not he stepped here X plus Y equals angle on right hand at this. It's understanding all of these. This is what it is to be a fight obsessive. Why? Because you don't just, when you describe wine, you don't just say what mechanical tools were made to make it. When you go in and you fall in love with wine and the study of wine and the drinking of wine and the sharing of wine, you don't just say what country it was built in. You don't just say, you know, how they stepped on it. It's all of these things, plus history, plus emotion, plus passion, plus the emotions it creates in you, the notes and flavors, are they real or are they imagined? That is what it is to study wine. Otherwise, we're just like, well, it was made in this region, it's red and it's sweet. And forever, if that's good enough, but that's not how deep study and knowledge is done. You don't just stop at where it was made and then get better at that or find the terms for that. You go deeper and you go deeper, right? So that's how we study it. And how we study it that way, we understand that Greg Jackson's been studying it that way for a long time. and understanding the relationship of the individual. I talked to him, so I'm getting back to the questions now after I meandered. People said it was okay if I meander. Some people really liked it. I can't help it. So I hope it's okay. I hope it's not something you hate about this show. But Greg Jackson, now, these things that we're uncovering and we're starting to discover and understand, all of these layers are all at play, and the relationship between the physical, the mental, the technical, the physiological, the energy system, the emotional, all of those things each have subsets of, you know, so there's this enormous thing. So do we look at the big picture of how it relates? Do we look at only the technical? Do we look at only the physiological? Do we look at only, are there other aspects that we haven't even understood? The answer is yes. There are many other aspects. Perception of time, that's real. That's real. If you do some, talk to a baseball player, a hitter, about how he perceives time, study that, and then let's compare that to how Demetrius Johnson experiences time. That's there. That's something, a road we're going down in the future. When Dominic Cruz is interacting with the environment and the opponent, there are algorithms that are taking place in his mind, sorting algorithms and other algorithms. We're going to study those. Over the next number of years, I've begun that study. It's very complicated and very difficult, but we're going to study that because ultimately that's what we want to know, what's happening in there. We don't give a fuck about his Twitter beef. This is what we want to know. So now, this is where we're going. And I'm not going there because I think I'm some fucking smart guy. I'm just studying what the coaches are doing. I'm studying what Dom is doing. I'm studying what these people are doing. And if you dedicate 60 or 70 hours of your life to doing that, you gather the knowledge. That knowledge raises new questions. I talked to Ludwig and Greg, and both of them gave me little nuggets that have now started brand new explorations. This will go on forever. And along the way, would it be great to stop at one of the It'd be great. I could probably be more successful if I only stayed, never changed from technical breakdowns. There's a whole, people have started to get into that. We don't want to do that. We want to go further. And why did we do that? Because we're inspired by Greg, and we're inspired by Coach Kavanaugh, and we're inspired by Matt Hume, and we're inspired by Dominic, and we're inspired by Connor, and that's what they're doing. So now, all of that me going crazy, where does that leave us? It leaves us at saying, what's the most important thing is all of those things. And once you get to the point that you're out front of all of those things, you're constantly raising each one. You're not just raising how your jab works. You're raising how you learn. And you're raising how you mentally, all of them, all going up. And now we've got to coach a guy. We've got Greg in our corner, and we're fighting. He needs to understand all of that and then also have a relationship with an individual that understands what their needs are right now. And Cub Swanson's need that night is different than another night. And George St. Pierre, when he cornered him, is different than another night. They're not just by person. They're by moment and person. So the best coaches will have this incredible complexity to what they understand and also understand when to be simple, when to be emotional, what they need. That's what it is. There's no easy answer for any of this stuff. That when you dig into it, the beauty of it is that all you find is that these are impossible questions to answer without another year of study and another year of study and another year of study. And that's really exciting. And when I realize personally my own self here, and I'm alone. Right, I'm hoping to be able to interact with you guys, but by myself, I'm getting a little introspective here, and I don't want to sit around talk about, you know, my own perspective. I want to talk about our perspective. But for me personally, having said that, I realized when I talk to these guys, I'm in the studio a lot, and I'm studying and doing this on my own, is that the little moments I talk to Greg or Dwayne or any of these people, I got all this extra questions. In that I need a little more mentorship. So I reached out to Matt Hume and asked him if in February I could come and shadow him for 10 days just on my own. I'm not going to bring a camera. I'm just going to go and take the study further. And he said, maybe. He said, maybe. So that's a good start. You start with maybe and you figure out what his hesitation might be and how you can make him feel better about that. And then you try to make that a yes. I'm sorry if I went off on tangents, and I hope that's okay. Chase, how are we doing for time? 19 minutes. They told me 30 minutes, and here we are. We answered 1.5 questions. All right. You mentioned evolving and getting I am Ed Han. You mentioned evolving and getting ahead of the curve. What if you're stuck on next steps? Okay. So that's really interesting to me. That's where, as I talked about all those things that we want to study, inevitably you end up at studying people who are growing and actualizing themselves, trying to be their potential. And if such a thing exists, to exceed it or create new potentials and then go up. And I think that study of self and that then desire for philosophy, I think, is an inevitable result of deep study of the martial arts for long periods of time. I think any amount of history that you look at, whether you're looking at Bruce, you're looking at the Shaolin monks, you're looking at anybody, this is an inevitable place. And I don't think that's maybe unique to martial arts. I think if you commit your life to any kind of study, you end up at the study of self, the study of growth, overall philosophy. And I think this is partly what maybe part of this show will become, if that's okay with you guys. This is a complicated question. It's the kind of thing I think we're going to try to explore together ongoing in the show. But you mentioned evolving and getting ahead of the curve. What if you're stuck on the next steps? Okay. A lot of people in the world, you see it, we all see it, some of us experience it, look at all the things that they would want to do, and then they get analysis paralysis or option paralysis, it's called. And a simple example is you put on Netflix and you decide you're going to watch a TV show, and 45 minutes later, all you did was look through Netflix. That's option paralysis. You've done nothing because there's so much out there, and we live in a culture with so much that it seems very overwhelming. The next step, and that's why I put this book out here. So this book is called The One Thing. By Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. And they autographed it to me because I referenced it when talking about how some fighters can think. I'm a real nerd. But it's a modern philosophical approach. It basically, here, it's called the centering question. It's much more complicated than that, but I urge you to get the book. It simply says, in any situation, ask yourself, what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? Okay, so you don't have to, somebody's like, I want to be an entrepreneur. Okay, what do I do? Well, how do I start? Should I build it? You just start. You just start. You figure out what's the one thing you should do. I don't know. I guess I should have an Etsy store. Okay, have an Etsy store. Well, I don't have any clothes in it. What do you think you should do? Buy clothes? Like, you literally start. You start and you take action, and once you narrow down, spend time figuring out what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it will render everything else less important or irrelevant. And you do that thing. And you can do that thing in many things. It's a way of thinking that you can apply to just about anything. I used that and applied it when breaking down Du Ho Choi, that the takedown when he was against the fence and he was trying to counter your attempt to keep him down, the one thing was keep the head lower than the hips. And by doing that, he didn't have to really worry about anything else. Everything else was incidental. It was less important or irrelevant. And that philosophy, and was absolutely positively, you saw it when in certain situations with Cobb, he would go to the head. That's his one thing. Tony Ferguson, when you come in against him, he built one thing. If I get that snap down and I've built it to such a degree, it renders everything else I need to do in the space of you closing distance to get a hold of me. That snap down sequence that I've built renders everything else less important or unnecessary. We're now in snap down city. I'm Tony Ferguson, and I'm fucking better than you here. He created a one thing to address that issue. And you can do that in anything. Whatever stage you're stalled at, what's the one thing you can do here? What's the one thing? You'll often think, well, what are the three things? Or what if I had five things? It's not that. One thing doesn't mean you're doing one thing. You're doing one thing, which upon doing it will create the question, what's the next thing? What do I do after this? Okay. Oh, I'm doing that. It's working. Oh, that now it's turned out that nobody's coming to my Facebook page. What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, people will come to my fucking Facebook page? Boom, you'll do that. Upon doing that, people will come in and you'll say, and this applies in fighting and like almost everything that philosophically applies in fighting, it applies in whatever else you're doing. I wish I could be more help than that, but I actually have a time constraint today and it's weird. I'm just having so much fun and so neat, and I hope people seem to really enjoy it. And I really appreciate that a lot, and I appreciate people's feedback a lot. We'll try to move on. I think we're probably close to the limit, but we'll keep talking. How cognitive biases interfere with enjoying, analyzing, game planning, and strategizing fights? Okay, that's a really great question. So let's find a simple definition of what a cognitive bias is. A cognitive bias refers to a systemic pattern of deviation from norm or rationality in judgment, whereby influences about other people and situations may be drawn in an illogical fashion. Okay, so it goes on. Now, some cognitive biases are presumably adaptive. They may lead to more effective actions in given contexts. Now, we hear the word bias, and we automatically think that may be a bad thing. Now, it depends what our purpose is. You said analyzing, game planning, strategizing facts. Now, game planning for somebody whose job it is to figure out how to fight, or a job it is to figure out how to do something in business or to do something in politics or whatever, you better get that one right. You know, you better get that right. So that's different than analyzing or enjoying. Your biases are part of your enjoyment when you watch fights. To listen to an unbiased person is not, you know, or to watch fights with an unbiased person is not going to be fun for you. You're going to watch fights with biased people, people who hate you, the fighter you love. That is the enjoyment of fights. Your different perspectives of other people is the enjoyment of fights. Going on Twitter and being excited that something happened and finding somebody else disagreed, that's your enjoyment of fights. To disagree and to allow yourself to be influenced by other people's bias is a really good thing in society. To open your mind to other ideas, to have your biases challenged and changed. Biases in and of themselves are not bad. Biases that you will hold on to for life and not be open to somebody changing your mind is very bad. Because if you're wandering through reality with a reality that isn't so, and you're making choices in whatever way with things that are not so, that's bad for you. But if you're watching fights and you hate Conor McGregor and your friend thinks Conor McGregor is the greatest ever, you now got something fun. And as far as analyzing, my job is this job didn't really exist. And now, as I'm kind of, we're in a world where fighting is consumed more and differently, the job will change over time. But I try to look at it the way that people early on tried to, you know, look at explaining wine or music or, you know, being a connoisseur of something. And bias is allowed. If you disagree with me, there's lots of other shows you can watch. I don't have to be right when I analyze a fight. I have to create some question in you, or I have to show something you didn't see, even if you disagree. And I think it's great when people disagree. And I think it's great when we don't judge each other's biases. But yeah, if you're strategizing a fight or game planning a fight or in a fight, your biases sometimes can also still be valuable there. And they can be unvaluable and the opposite of valuable. If you have been training and you've had the superiority bias, whereby training with people far lower than you, you misestimate what the person you're facing is based on that superiority bias that you've developed over, you're in a lot of trouble. Unless you go in, and because of that, it allows freedom that go and you knock somebody out, it may have been of value to you, right? Biases are not inherently bad. And I think we mistakenly think they are. They are often bad. And sometimes good. So I'll give that one some more thought too. And let's re-examine, let's return to that if and when we can. Because there's no definitive answer for that. And I hope that this conversation gets you to think about that and agree or disagree and look through. There are hundreds of different kinds of bias. Most of them are ways that influence your thinking. Once you recognize them, you're a little less susceptible to them. You're much more likely to learn about yourself and watch yourself and go, what's influencing me here? Oh, I misunderstood. You know, I misunderstood what this person said to me. I had a bias. You know, some of the simplest biases are when you're a kid, you overestimate how smart your parents are. And then when you're a teenager, you underestimate how smart they are. And you know, when you're a kid, you overestimate their power. And when you're a teenager, you underestimate. And that rhythm gets repeated in our life forever. So you meet a boss or you either vilify them or you make them a hero or you make them more powerful. And the truth is always in between. And with that type of thing, we end up having relationships where we project on somebody that they're doing terrible things to us, or we misunderstand that they actually, ignore signs of different things. Once you start recognizing that, you can easily watch yourself over time. And that develops like a muscle too. Watch yourself over time and don't judge them ever. Judge you. How am I responding to them? What's my reaction? And it's probably based on things that I mistake about them. So judge you and adapt you. And but let's explore bias more. It's a very interesting idea. It's a very interesting idea and reality and game of reality. Chase, I know we're over 30 minutes, but let's do at least one. And I know I said this a bunch, but thank you. This is a really neat thing for me to get to do. And I really appreciate you guys a lot hanging out with me and the feedback. And in the new year, we will make this a live thing, mostly on the morning after fights. All right. Thanks again. Don't see many fighters deliver elbows from full guard the way GSP or John Jones did. Why? That's a really cool question, too. Okay. We can, just like I was talking about earlier, about how you thin slice all of the aspects of something and explore them and learn about them and find new ones and find how they interact with other ones. Like the technical, like I said earlier, really interacts with, it's Stipe, I used as an example, with the physiological. Stipe's ability to quickly direction change is a skill, and it's expressed from a physical platform or an athletic platform. One without the other doesn't work the same way. So the relationships between emotional and psychological, emotional and physical, technical and emotional, all of those are what we're looking at. And so any of those you can look at. So if we go in, and all of them you should look at, but also you can't look at all of them. So if whether we are sitting around having a discussion over beers or I'm trying to do what I do for work to show somebody something, I can either pick one or some. But the truth is, in all of those things, there's an explanation to this and everything like it. And even in your focusing, do we want to look at just why these elbows aren't happening? Or are we better served to look at why anything works and then doesn't work and then works and then doesn't work? And that's the way I'd like to look at this. We'll keep coming back to the ideas of elbows and guard, but let's apply it to the systemic coming and going of techniques. So I did a breakdown of Khabib Nurmagomedov using the wrist ride as he was beating up Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson knows full well about the wrist ride. They train it at the Black Zillions. And he played it a little different with a hyper-aggression. The technical was good, but his psychological and emotional approach to it, his commitment to it, was a big part of it. So alone, why does this wrist ride work? It works because with the motorcycle grip, this happens and leverage over here. But that's a lie. It's missing, it's not a lie. It is missing some of the truths of that. Alone, that if I show you how that wrist ride works, Chase should be able to do that to Khabib. No, he can't. Why not? Well, he's not as skilled. That's true. Let's make him as skilled. Still can't do it because there's a psychological component to how Khabib did that. So now everybody's doing that wrist ride. They were doing it as I did the breakdown. If you go back and check it out, that would really mean a lot to me. As I was doing it that week, Uriah Hall and Ryan Bader both used it Uriah Hall was beaten by Gegard. Gegard used it on Uriah Hall, slightly changed it. This last weekend, we saw it a ton because once somebody sees Khabib, oh, shit, this guy just mastered that thing and ran this show with that. Why don't I dust that thing off? And really, Khabib didn't invent it. That's been around forever. There's old footage of wrestlers doing this probably, when they used to wrestle with no clothes up on Olympus. Olympus? And really, Robin Black? But it's been forever. But he went in and you see it and you're like, oh, shit. Yeah, we'll make that work. Now it's working. So what will we do? The rest of us will look and go, yeah, I want to get that. But we're not shallow-sighted. We'll be like, we can't also have him there or else anybody who gets heavy on the hip and gets that motorcycle grip automatically will win the fight. So we must solve it. Make it not work. When we make it not work, it'll go out of style. It'll become too much effort, and in doing it even better than make it not work, somehow your arm is now in jeopardy. You're reaching in to get that motorcycle grip on that wrist ride, and in doing that better than not get wrist ridden and beaten up is turn that into a disadvantage. Then eventually people are like, shit, I can't go for a wrist ride. Every time people do, they get their arm torn off, they get reversed, whatever. So answers are found in the gym. Now we go back to elbows, and that's a great word. I don't know who came up with it. Use it for weeks or months and then move past it. We talked about language. These things are not permanent. This isn't, he's so durable. You know, that is not a definitive sentence of anything. We keep going. So we won't use the elbows necessarily. Let's use the can opener. So for years, I'm in your guard and I'm trapped in your guard. I don't know what to do. Oh my God, I'm in your guard. And now, back in those days, you might triangle or armbar me or omoplata me. This is bad. So the wrestlers went and created reproduced the can opener. As they put pressure on the back of your head, they drove it up, they put their forearms into your collarbones, and it really hurts. It's traumatic on your skeleton. The way to relieve that pressure is you open your guard. And they slide through or they do whatever. Mission accomplished. I was in your guard. That was bad. I applied the can opener. You opened it. That was good. Then that worked for a long time until people were like, you know what? As soon as that motherfucker puts that can opener on you, swivel your hips out like this, this, and this, and armbar that guy. And his arms are going to be trapped. They're going to armbar him. So now it was guard bad, can opener good, armbar bad. We better not use can openers anymore. And for years, nobody used the can opener until George, working with Danaher, and there's other examples, but this was the really obvious one, was fighting Carlos Condit, and he can opened him and stopped the armbar. Because you don't stop the progression. Well, I guess can openers are useless forever. You find an answer to the problem. The problem was we got armbarred. Now we shut down the armbar. The can opener works again. And it's the same thing in here. The damaging elbows from guard comes from inside bicep control or armpit control. So you get in, his arms on the bottom are attacking dangerous. There's all kinds of chaos. You get in and you control them. Inside control, inside bicep control, armpit control, other. And once that's there, it's a simple angle. There's a hip placement and a work from the ball of the foot. There's a lot of details in here. And boom over the top. And then you play the other hip back and boom over the top and you play that game. Well, the answer to that game is don't let them control your biceps. So people started overhooking and many other answers. And as soon as they did, you'll see now guys in that position, arm is here, I'm pinned. Overhook, back of the head. That became my safer position. When you go up also, the answer used to be, maybe I'll try to get double wrist control from the bottom and submit you. The answer now is, as soon as you come up there, I get an underhook, heist my hips up, and I'm back on the feet. So the game of getting back to your feet became so developed that doing damage in guard became less effective. And that's kind of where we're sitting right now. And then, but you see Misha Serkinov with a beautiful, at 205 pounds, beautiful submission off his back. I know he set it up from a different angle, but still. And others, guys are going to go start attacking there again. Because now that everybody is standing up, the ability to defend takedown or the ability to defend submissions may atrophy because my training partners, all of them, I'm only playing the game of holding them down. They're playing the game of standing up. That's the battle we all do in the gym every day for 2 or 3 years. If they're not attacking submissions, my ability to defend and deal with submissions may atrophy. When that happens, brilliant guys sneak in and start submitting guys. And that cycle happens forever. So now we're dealing with the technical, the emotional, the philosophical, the psychological, the energy systems, the physiological, all of these things, performance, flow state. And now we're also having to deal with the ebbs and flows and trends that happen like bell-bottom jeans or mustaches. And all of that is what's going on. And that'll take us back to finish with that earlier question. What's the most important part? Or what's the best way to corner? Unknown. It's still all happening. It's still all happening, and it's changing. And the biggest thing we learn is that once we acclimatize ourselves, that we are forever in a state of change, we live our lives very differently. You live your life in a state of growth. You don't have to grow as fast. Like the question about getting ahead of the curve, you don't have to get ahead of the curve. You just got to get ahead of where you were before. Got to be a little smarter, be a little more efficient, be a little better at learning, gather some new information, be passionate about some things. That's it. I think this resolved pretty good. And I had a lot of fun. And thank you guys for this a lot. It means a lot to me to get to be in here and think this stuff out loud. And I thank you for it. And thanks, Chase. And that's Ask Robin Black episode 2, bitches. We will see you guys maybe on Sunday. Enjoy the hostilities.